Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. It's the Sleep Number Everything Smart Bed Sale. Every smart bed and base are on sale during our Memorial Day event. Up to 50% off, plus free home delivery. Limited time. Exclusively the Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.
You're about to listen to Goosebuds. This is Chad Quant. This feed is free, but if you want to hear these episodes earlier and ad-free, you can subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/goosebuds, which also gives you bonus episodes, our Discord, and more. Please subscribe to support the show. Now enjoy this episode of Goosebuds. Talking about like having these kind of time sensitive games, which is part of the reason why Outer Wilds did throw me. I know there's like a tight loop. Did you ever play Dead Rising? Really got me with that.
Yeah,
like
I did. I played Dead Rising 1 and 2.
I think I only played most of 1, but and I know that's part of the loop. Like if you take it off, it kind of ruins it. But just that idea of like every second you waste wandering around, there's a timed objective falling away. Like, oh, that just eats at my anxiety, man.
Yeah. The first one I wanted to love. The concept was so great. Yeah. I love Dawn of the Dead. So, like, I was, like, so into it. But it was so stressful that I just couldn't do it. And then the second one is way more generous.
Okay.
The second one is, like... It's fine. Listen, go have fun. There's plenty of time to get to these cool things. Yeah, there's some miscellaneous stuff that you might miss on, but like most of it's really great. And then it had online play. So,
coming to your city or something, I guess?
Yeah, there's basically be like, I think it was maybe up to 4, or maybe I might be confusing it with Dead Rising 4, but there was at least one other player, because a friend of mine played together on Xbox and he jumped into my game and you could almost, I feel like almost go anywhere. It was a blast.
That's right.
Because I would be like it's in a casino, like a Las Vegas type resort.
Yeah.
And then I would be doing something like building a Wolverine pair of gloves to chop down zombies. And then he'd be like, hey man, come outside. And then so you'd come outside into like the courtyard and I'd go outside and you go, where are you? And he'd go, wait. And then I'd see turning around the corner would be like a monster truck.
Hell yeah.
And then he would just like crush like, you know, 1500 of them and then pull up in front of me. We were just like kind of doing our own thing together in this world. And that was like one of the first times I felt like that was a possibility in gaming. And that was a blast.
That's rad. I love the way you're picturing that. I'm just picturing the Avengers. I'm bringing the party to you, but it's a
exactly
big old monster truck. It's funny you mentioned Dawn of the Dead. I loved that Zack Snyder, James Gunn movie remake of it, the 2008.
Oh, Army of the Dead?
Oh, no, the first Dawn of the Dead remake.
Okay, yeah.
I never saw Army of the Dead, or the one where they're doing a heist, which is that first one where Snyder was a little more reined in. I should be careful, James. I don't know where you stand on the Zack Snyder call. I don't want to get you upset and angry.
I'm happy to elaborate. Sure. I speak very vocally about how I feel about Zack Snyder, which is that for the longest time, I was a Zack Snyder apologist. Which isn't to say wasn't militant. I just went, he does a lot of stuff that I dig. Like he takes some swings that I'm like kind of into.
Yeah.
Because again, Dawn of the Dead I thought was fantastic. 300 I think is still pretty perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I even really love his Watchmen adaptation. It's so different. It's like it's through an entirely different lens.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I love the graphic novel. I just rewatched the animated one.
Oh, the recent adaptation, right? They did. Yeah.
And I was like, maybe I should do the motion comic. Like I was just like, I'll just consume Watchmen like crazy.
Yeah.
And his is very different, and I think some of it misses the mark, but other stuff is like really fantastic. So I was with him with that. I own Sucker Punch on Blu-ray.
Wow.
The ultimate director's cut. I have seen it.
Yeah.
And so Sucker Punch, I was in theaters and the whole time I just remember going like, I'm not even going to bother trying to defend this, but I'm like having a really good time.
It's some cool music videos, right? They're like, okay, now there's like a bunny mech or whatever.
And you're yeah. And then, and so I was with him even to Man of Steel. I always preface, I'm not a Superman guy. Mm. I'm not big into Superman.
Yeah, yeah.
So Man of Steel, I was like, I dig this Henry Cavill dude. And it's like, it's at least a different take maybe.
Yeah.
And I know most people consider it the wrong take, but it was a different take. And then Batman v Superman, I also didn't hate. I thought it was a bloated monstrosity, but the stuff that he did pull, like their battles and stuff, I was like, I'm kind of like, I feel like this is the first time I've seen Batman and or Superman doing this kind of stuff.
Yeah, so yeah. Okay. That fight scene in the warehouse that everyone always talks about is very much like from The Dark Knight, the comic book.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's rad. He's just like haymaker and dudes, but then you just gotta remove yourself from the rest of it.
Yeah. But then after that, it ended. I saw Army of the Dead, or what is it? Is it Army of the Dead?
Yeah, that one's, I never saw Army of the Dead. That's weird because they built a whole franchise around it, right? Where there's like,
yeah,
the Codebreaker got a movie and they're like, we'll do this whole thing. James, you just helped me realize, maybe this is just super obvious, like movie nerd stuff, but the fact that Zack Snyder did a Superman and now James Gunn is going to do a Superman, but before they both did Dawn of the Dead together, right? Like James Gunn wrote that script that I thought was really fun.
Interesting.
And, yeah, interesting. Kind of weird overlap that they like now are split down different paths and still doing it.
Yeah.
I don't know why we started. Oh, we were talking about like time game stuff, but yeah, you maybe also realize like Dawn of the Dead, what I loved so much about, I guess, the original and that remake was the soul sucking time drain of like, we're trapped in here for days. And what will we become if we're just, you know, becoming these like consumers, and some of us are messing around in the mall, some of us are having affairs or whatever was going on in that one. And then, you know, Dead Rising is like, hurry, you gotta go, you got 3 days. Like, it's just like that. It's very, actually very different than what those movies do.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
Probably made you alienate certain people by calling out Zack Snyder. I'm also with you. But I realized, James, we're scheduling this. Thank you so much for just being down to record on both Easter and 420.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what you don't realize is that right while I'm doing this, I'm hunting for eggs and stoned out of my mind. They actually go pretty well together. So this is not an inconvenience at all. I honestly don't know who I'm talking to.
No, yeah, yeah. I mean, Jesus was the original wake and bake, as we all know.
It's true, yeah, yeah.
I was thinking about Easter a little bit, and James, from one writer to the other, I think I have some notes for the story of the Bible, I realize.
Okay.
If you're down to go down this road with me, James.
Well, considering it's never been reinterpreted or revised ever.
Well, this came up because I was watching the 70s Jesus Christ Superstar clips just to remember what that was. Which is a hoot. It was like, it's weird. Satan's not really involved in the story. Like,
yeah. Okay.
I know there's like a movie version where he's like in the crowd while Jesus is carrying the cross. Right. And there's like, Jesus went into the desert at some point and the devil tempted him. But like, if you're building a big narrative, the Bible, and God and Jesus is your main protagonist, the devil is your main antagonist, I think, arguably. It's weird that this is like, Easter is like the infinity war of it. And the devil's kind of just like not there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Can I offer?
Yeah, please.
Can I offer some? Because I agree with you from a narrative perspective, 100%. But as a text that may have been conceived over time, right? Like,
yeah,
that perhaps what we're missing is the inherent message. And I don't ascribe to be a Christian or even religious in any way. But maybe what we're missing is that the onus is on us, the human beings, and perhaps later on there was an interpretation that a red horned beast like thing manipulating from the wings. Maybe that's an example of people inventing something that completely removes their own accountability from this thing that was trying to give us guidance. And we were like, no, well, actually, what happened? We didn't crucify him. There was a guy in the crowd
it. Yeah, there's like a guy, the devil shows up and is like whispering in Pontius Pilate's ear, like, do it. Yeah. You hate it. Or like, or when Jesus is like, goes out and he has that night before where he's like, I'm really regretting, I don't know, God, maybe I don't want to do this. And I feel like in a new modern remake adaptation, the devil would be there, be like, yeah, Jesus, come with me and we'll go to Vegas and you can get a cruise letter and all you want. And he's like, no, devil.
We're going to rob a casino.
Really? It's like, yeah, during the zombie apocalypse, it's going to be impossible. And I need your skill to turn the undead. I just felt like there's some notes story-wise.
There's definitely some notes.
Maybe now that we've accused the Bible of being badly written, maybe it's worth hopping into the text of this show, James. Welcome to Goosebuds, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me. Unless you're welcoming the audience because they tuned out the first 10 minutes of this podcast.
No, I think like off-topic banter is kind of like a hallmark now of this show. Been doing it for so long. And then, we'll have a time code in there so people can skip over it if they don't want to hear about Dead Rising and the rising of the Jesus. Mm-hmm. But
Everything's rising this weekend.
Yeah, Goosebuds, James, you've been so kind to join. You know, originally it was a show where me and my co-host would like talk about R.L. Stine and his works. And then we read over 100 R.L. Stine Goosebump books and it broke our brains and they died. And now I alone am carrying the torch of inviting people on to just share about more better works that gave them goosebumps. James, I guess I should introduce yourself a little bit, but you're a talented writer and internet comedian and personality. Also an indie wrestler, I believe, if I've seen correctly.
Yeah, technically. I found out something that I decided to do at the ripe old age of 40. Talk about a midlife crisis. But I did find out that I have like essentially the IMDb equivalent of a wrestling page someone made for me that tracks all my wins and losses.
Oh, that's awesome. What's the name of the wiki for that?
What is it? It's Cage Match, I believe.
Okay.
I believe it's Cage Match, and it's the Internet Wrestling Database. And I didn't enter myself. Someone entered myself, and they have the dates of all of my matches, my win-loss, my opponents. And when I saw that, I was like, holy shit, this is real.
You're doing it, dude.
I am logged in this database as a wrestler because, I assume that anything that I've ever done is me cosplaying as that like my whole life.
Well, I mean, that's kind of this entire entertainment career, right? It's sort of a not a fake it till you make it, but like I know I feel a lot. I was like, I don't really know if I can ever call myself blank until I don't know what that goalpost was, and I still have a hard time being like, I guess I'm a writer. I guess I'm doing it.
I feel exactly the same way.
You wrestle under James Angel. Where did that name come from?
Besides, it's funny because you mentioned I did internet comedy. Yeah, for like. For over 10 years, two different companies, several different channel names. I did basically Mystery Science Theater style comedy with video games.
Sure.
And I would always try and inject things that I love into it, a la professional wrestling. And so I started a series where I use the create a character feature to create the cast members of our group. And then I would have them wrestle. Now, the thing is about those games is they're extremely complex. You can make almost anything. Essentially scan in your own face. So you can do all that. But you can't make them say a name that they don't have in the announcer repertoire.
Oh, sure.
So I went through and I made myself last. If I recall, I made myself last and I was running out of time. So as I was scanning for something, James is there. Mm-hmm. And then Angel was like fifth from the top. And I was like, this needs to be done. So I just went to A and I was like, James Angel, that makes sense.
Sure.
I threw some like wings or whatever on my character's outfit. And I said, there we go, James Angel. Because up until that point, I wrestled, I did backyard wrestling when I was a teenager.
Oh, sick.
Up until that point, when I would think of, I was called the Real Deal. That I went by the Real Deal. And I don't know why.
It was R-E-E-L. I went by the Real Deal, fisherman.
James Willems.
Yeah.
And so, but they didn't have that. And I also was like, but I don't even know if that makes any sense. That's Evander Holyfield. but so I just clicked Angel went with James Angel, but it stuck. We did enough of that series that it became a thing. People in our community started referring to my wrestling persona as James Angel. And I was like, it's not bad.
Yeah, no, it rolls off the tongue. It's great.
It works.
Have you worked in like some signature moves yet? Like, do you have a Pentecost drop or something?
I have. So I can give you all of my signature moves. I have a atomic drop that I turn into a back body drop, and it's called Heaven or Hell.
Love it. Let's rock.
I have a finisher, which is a Fisherman Buster. And anyone listening who knows wrestling moves will be like, aha, the Fisherman. It's essentially a Fisherman Buster, and it's called Icarus.
Sick.
And then I have a submission move, which is a Texas Cloverleaf.
Okay.
But I make it my own, and I call it the Biblically Accurate Cloverleaf.
That's great. I love that one.
Those are my moves. That's the only ones that have been named thus far that I've given official James Angel branding.
I love that. I mean, it sounds like you were into it for a while. I didn't get into, I kind of like dodged wrestling for years. And then out here in LA, started going to the indie scenes, like PWG. And, I think I just completely reevaluated how cool this thing is. And like, oh, there's... I always knew it was dangerous and like all the stunts for it, but I was like, oh, there's like more theatricality to this than I think like the WWE filter sort of like condensed a lot of it down when I was watching it on TV. And really fell in love with it. You just actually just reminded me, like, the first thing of yours, James, I ever saw that I really, really loved. I think one of the first things that even brought me into like Funhouse, it was either your wife Elise doing the Avatar video game. Navi makeup, which is a game I worked on as a coordinator, so I particularly loved that video. But it was so funny. Or it was Talking Stockings, a podcast that I still wish you'll bring back sometime. But I mean, that third or fourth episode I saw was basically a wrestling match, it seemed like.
It's chaos. Yeah.
You're hammering a wall.
It's essentially chaos.
I think that really kind of sold me on your guys' commitment to the bit.
Mm-hmm.
So props to you, and thank you for joining us. I'm trying to badly transition us back into how I'm gonna transition this into Junji Ito.
It was a nightmare.
There you go. I asked you like what media gives you goosebumps, and you brought up Junji Ito. Funny enough, not this book, but you mentioned one that I also love, the short story, The Enigma of, I would say Kamigawa, but that's Magic the Gathering. The actual pronunciation of that, Kamigawa Fault.
Is it Amigara?
Amigara. Sorry, thank you. It's in this book I'm holding right now. I should have known it. An amazing short story, which we could talk about too. It's part of the reason I wanted to talk about Gio. But I challenged you to join and check out a new book, Gio, and we can get into it. But I mean, kind of initially, like, I threw a weird one at you because this is a book about death stench.
Yeah, it is. It is a book about death stench and fish.
And fish.
Fish and death stench.
Stinkies.
Yeah.
And I mean, we could kind of get into the plot for it, but this was one of the, actually, I think I read Amigawa Fault first, loved it, changed my life. And then I was like, I got to read what else this dude did. And then I read Gio next. And there was kind of a moment of like, is this a joke? Is this like, I had not read a story where the start of it is just like, everything's stinky.
Yeah.
And I don't know what to do about it.
So how did you come across Amigara Fault?
I think like Reddit or like, I hate to admit it, like early 4chan days of like on a comics board, someone sharing the panels and just like,
yeah.
What? Oh, this is like hitting all of my phobias of like, I'm very claustrophobic. So the idea of like putting yourself in a hole that your body can barely fit really got to me.
I am also very claustrophobic. I don't really have phobias, and I don't even know if this counts. But spelunking is like a phobia for me.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where I go, but I'm never going to be doing it.
I would never go down there.
I don't need to sweat it at all because I will not be there. So
is there anything that anyone could ever tell you, like down at the bottom of this hole is blank, and you would be like, I'll go into it then?
I've gone into holes, but it's like not the one where I'm like, am I certain that I can get out? I always point to the movie The Descent.
Oh, so good.
Right?
Yeah.
It's a great movie, but it stops being scary for me when the monsters show up. Sorry to spend Descent spoilers. Because if it were me and I was in their situation where like the pathway we went, it closed behind behind us. We're stuck down here or whatever. And a monster showed up. I'd go, thank God for you. And I'd bare my throat willingly.
Just let me free the last thing
I want to do is die here silently in the dark. You know, just let's do it.
Add me to that blood pool. Thank you very much. Yes, yeah.
You're an avenging angel and you've set me free. I'm so grateful, you bald, hairless, sharp-toothed monster. But yeah, no, so I don't like getting wedged into stuff. I just actually sent my wife, Elise, a Instagram video I saw, which is there's an amusement park somewhere, like almost like a rock climbing gym. Yeah. But the whole thing is it's thin paths.
Hell no.
That get you stuck.
Hell no.
Yeah. So,
I mean,
you imagine paying money. Here you go.
To choose 20. To do it. Yeah. I get down, sucked down this like TikTok rabbit hole now of like, it seems like auto-generated. Here's a story of someone that got stuck in a hole, and it's like a cross diagram, kind of like Amagawa Fault of like, here's the cross section of the path these people took before they got stuck. And it seems like every time it requires a blind hope that you'll just be able to get out of there. Like you can only go one direction.
Yeah, yeah. I saw a funny one that was, I think, a parody of those. And it was like a shitty little animation. And it was like, first thing he did, it's an AI generated narrator or whatever. Mm-hmm. He's like, he went down there, he got stuck. He went down this way and he fell into a 6 inches deep puddle of shit. And then he crawled out of that, but he was wedged upside down under a water. He was waterboarded, and just shows this little icon of a man just getting further and deeper and more stuck and more things bad happening to him.
That seems like a genuine nightmare. I mean, should we briefly talk? I mean, the short story of Amagawa Fault is so good of just like, I don't think I had read a story. I don't even know if it's worth summarizing the core idea. It's just a fault opens, like an earthquake happens and exposes a mountain range to a bunch of people of silhouette-sized holes in the side of a mountain.
Yeah.
Like, no real entry point until then. And, you know, one guy going like, I'm stripping to my clothes. This hole, the core, you know, that became a meme, I feel like. This hole that was made for me.
Yeah.
And that compulsion to keep going after it, right? Like that is,
I reread it because I was, obviously it's all part of the same collection. So I was like, oh, I'll reread this one again. Even though I think like you, I think I found it on Dig.
Yeah.
I think it's because someone left a comment that was like, dur, dur, dur. And I was like, what is that? And then another comment explained and linked out to like an image gallery that had it. And that's how I first read it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was always like an imager link was like, here's like 20 pages. Yeah. Just read this. And it's an amazing short story. Yeah.
But the best thing about rereading it is that first guy, Naganaki or whatever, he's like, I found mine, and he's like really smug about it. He's like, I found mine, and they're like, yeah, I guess it kind of looks like you, and he's like, no, trust me, it looks like me, watch, I'll show you. And then he just like goes like stuck, and I'm like, and he's just him going fuck, but in a way he's so confident and smug standing there, he's like, yeah, hey, you don't believe me, I'll show you. Yeah.
Which is kind of rude because, yeah, I mean, I feel like all the times in just normal life, how much times have you like gone to like a sandwich shop and someone confidently will just be like, no, this sandwich out here to pick up is for me, not you. And you're like, that's not your coffee. That's my coffee. The amount of assumptions, I would be very suddenly like, hold on now. Let's double check this is your hole. Like, you might be taking my hole, man.
Yeah. He's like, trust me. That's me. It's the exact size and shape of me without shirt, without pants, but still having underwear on.
Yeah, also, I think it's, in fact, you have to trip down means it's not for you. Imagine if it was like right there, that silhouette, that's my Apple Watch. That's definitely mine. I would, I think it sounds like neither of us would ever, there's no reason to go in these holes. But the fact that just this like compulsive thought, I really don't think I had ever read a horror story like this. Mm-mm. So I'm kind of asking James, like, what was your, I mean, was this your first introduction to Junji Ito?
It was, yeah, at the time. And it would be like several years later where I don't, like, because it was just, you used to be able to just find things on the internet and you'd be like, did someone make this? Where is this? And then, but there would be no supporting information.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be able to click out. You wouldn't be able to reverse image search. You couldn't do any of these things. You'd be like, well, that was that. And it would just be the thing. So that's what, for me. And I just remember being like, man, that was creepy. Then it would occasionally get referenced again. Like you said, we're like, this is my whole kind of thing. you'd see like the lines, you'd be like, I know what that is. And then you do the Googling and you're like, what is that? And then eventually, I think Junji Ito, I don't know what happened, but he kind of, as manga, became even more mainstream.
Yeah, it was Death Stranding. Like, his cameo in Death Stranding really blew it up. I think it was before that.
Yeah, yeah. But they started like actually publishing his stuff here.
Yeah.
And so I started reading other shorts mostly, and then I was like, all right, I want to read Uzumaki, so I read Uzumaki and a lot of that stuff. But there's so much. That's the thing. So when you were like, let's read Gyo, I was like, oh, I've never read that one. That's like the other big one that I guess he has. So I haven't read that one, so I was excited to take it. I haven't read Frankenstein either.
No, that one's on my list. The last one I read was Dissolving Classroom, and there is not. I think Ito's a genius. There is something where, like, if you read a bunch of his in a row, it does start to, like, you just kind of see similar tropes. It almost like blurs the lines, and it hits less. Yeah. It's better to like take time between it.
Yeah,
Uzumaki's probably the best one in terms of just like what he's doing, the different stories all going in cool ways with spirals. So I appreciate, but I'm kind of curious, like, how did surface high level review? How did you respond to Gia? We could talk about the story of it, but like, what was your reaction to it?
I liked it. I mean, I feel like there's nothing he's ever done that I'm like, oh, that was a waste, you know? And like, as manga artists have this incredible benefit of, you're like, wait, so you wrote and drew all this stuff? You drew
That's
all these
insane.
Pictures?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So like, even if it's like not a great story, you're like, but yeah, but you drew it too. Like, how long did that take? And so I always have an admiration for it. I also think, like, they're really fast reads.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah,
it's like
yeah.
300 pages, and I read most of it in one sitting, I would say. And I kind of love that. I love just burning, just adding another story into my brain. I didn't know where it was going. You had suggested, because The Long Dream. I had referenced The Long Dream, which is another short story of his.
I still need to read that one. Yeah.
It's like, definitely Amigara and Long Dream are like two of the ones that I'm like, this is a personal touching on something genuinely creepy for me.
Mm.
This one, I was like, oh, okay. And it's a slow start. I feel like it's a slow start. And some of the stuff at the opening, because it essentially deals with these fish that have these spindly legs, sharp legs.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Fast.
Should we lay that out a little bit for the listener?
Go ahead.
Just the highest level. Something. Yeah, it is a slow turn of, you're starting a story on a teenage couple, Tadashi and Kaori. They're going, I actually forgot this part of the story, that it starts with like a scuba diving adventure.
Like a shipwreck.
Yeah, which I, you know, like, oh, maybe they're sending stuff up there. And a brief encounter of something going by. But really, like a slow burn of like, oh, the water's, you know, we're done with this. The water smells, and Kaori just becomes obsessed with stench, you know, and like leading to like, well, it's the ocean. Okay, well, now we're back in the hotel, but now your breath stinks. And I don't want to kiss you. He's like, I don't want to brush my teeth every time I kiss you. I don't know you, James. I would, if my wife required that, I would brush my teeth every time I'm going to kiss my wife. I would do that. Like, it's not the biggest ask.
I mean, I mean, I was also at that point in the story, I was like, what's this guy? Does he stink? It turns out she's got some issues that she's working out with stink, and he probably brushes his teeth fine.
Yeah.
But at this point I was like, what is wrong with this guy? He doesn't take care of himself.
Which is an anxiety, I guess. Like, I this is TMI to you, James. Like, when I was in high school, I just like sweat all the time. I was just a big guy, like obsessed, worried about it, and anxiety of like putting deodorant on every 30 seconds, and like, so there's a little bit of like, I could relate almost to Tadashi's just concern, but he's not even that worried. He's just like, oh, this girl's annoying. Oh boy.
Well, first of all, they shouldn't be together.
No.
These two, she needs someone else. He needs someone else. The first dissection, the creepiest part of this first part of the book was me going like, these two do not belong.
No, I'm trying to actually think in other stories.
They don't know how to communicate, you know?
Even in Amagawa Fault, that couple's, they're not on the same page about the holes.
No.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if there's a single, I mean, I know there's like a love story in Uzumaki about the one couple that like spirals into each other, but even then, I don't know. I feel like they're too young to commit to that.
I mean, Junji Ito, something that works for him, but also one of the, I don't know, this isn't a criticism, it's just more of a style.
Yeah.
He tells these great stories, but he writes sometimes like an 11-year-old boy.
Uh-huh.
You know? Like, she's mean. you know, like
she's obsessed with being pretty. Like, aren't girls who are pretty girls the worst? Like that kind of
Would be like a line of dialogue in one of his books, like that, and it's pretty consistent across the board.
Yeah.
Maybe we can blame whatever translation happens, but I don't think so. I think it's just his style. Is he's like, they say what they're thinking. People are this way, people are that way, and that's all I'm going to say about that.
Yeah, and that's making me not trying to read too much into it. I'm like, is Junji Ito married? Does he got a wife? Has he got a partner somewhere that he's like? He's married since 2006, and they have two daughters. Okay, so he's
I mean, I think he might just keep it. You've covered R.L. Stein, right? And I feel like he knows his audience. And,
yeah,
and those books are not necessarily exploring complex relationships.
No.
Sometimes the characters just say what they're thinking and what he needs them to say so that way he can get to the next
siblings
page,
are annoying, you know? The idea of like being in love with anyone else is weird and gross, and we'll just parents don't listen is pretty much the constant Goosebumps. Fear Street a little bit more, but still like I think so-and-so's cute. That's about the extent of the romance in it. So Kaori has become obsessed with the stench. She's demanding she's taking like showers nonstop. The water.
She's ruining their vacation.
It's all her. It's really.
She's ruining it.
She's running up the water bill at the very least. The smell is so bad. And then, Tadashi comes back after buying a bunch of air spray, which is like, that's just covering up the smell. That's not solving it. Come back and find her passed out and a little crittering sound. And there's a fish on legs. Now, what did you think at this point, James? That was.
I thought it was just some mutated fish. I mean, I thought it was, you know, obviously there's like the Godzilla, the bombs went off,
sure,
and things happened. Japan is always, you know, integrating that into their art and stuff.
So,
and so
yeah,
I was like, something happened. Maybe we're going to get more insight. Maybe we're going to go back to that ship, that sunken ship, and we're going to find out that like, something happened.
Sewage waste or something. Yeah. The host.
Fish empire, maybe, you know, is rising up, and they figured out how to attack the land. So
that's also where I think I was going for it. It gets a little, I think there's some human fun stuff in, okay, we've gotten this weird stinky fish outside. Let's not worry about it. And it's still alive. We'll put it in a plastic bag. I think this is a very like, real fear of like anytime you're moving like a garbage bag out with like broken glass in it, just this like idea of these metal sharp pincers that'll just poke out and nab you. That feels genuine. That feels like a genuine thing.
And
I think at this whole point, like I really like how he's getting across. I don't know how you feel about this, James. Smell seems like a hard sense to convey in a book.
Yes, I agree.
But I could feel it here. I could feel that like grossness, like that lingering kind of like vibe.
Yeah. At this point, it feels like it was mostly coming. I was like, how much of this is it actually stinks? And how much of it is she's having some sort of reaction to something, you know?
Yeah, they're playing it very much like Tadashi is not being considerate of like, it's the hysteria of a woman feels like how he's interpreting a lot of this.
Yes, exactly. He's like, it does. Yeah, I guess it kind of stinks, but she's really blowing this out of proportion. It doesn't stink any worse than my breath.
Which maybe Tadashi should brush his teeth more if he's comparing it that way. I also really like the human of like, okay, I'm just going to take this thing out and I'm going to smash it with a rock and it won't stop. Fire alarm that went off in my house like a couple weeks ago, and there was no way to take out the battery, so I had to just like bury it in the backyard temporarily just stop the beeping. But yeah, this escalates. What happens next? Like, you know, Tadashi's like, I'm gonna go for a walk and think about if I want to stay with this girl. And wouldn't you know it, a bunch more fish are scuttling along the land.
Yeah,
but the fish are small fries, no pun intended, too. Shark, big old shark with legs. I love this thing. I love the look of this spider shark.
I think it looks awesome. I have notes.
Yes, please.
They make a big point in like the last third of that it runs off death stench and and all the fish. All the fish were dead.
Yeah.
They go, all the fish were dead. They weren't even alive running around. They were all dead. And I go, okay, that shark was not.
No.
That shark was actively trying to eat. Like, even if it was the legs, like you could say the legs are just dragging them around or whatever, that shark was actively trying to eat Tadashi.
No, absolutely.
And when he was pursuing them through the apartment relentlessly. So I don't know if that was a revision that Ito kind of came up with as he was writing. And he was like, I don't know, it's death. But I was like, that shark sequence is not a dead shark.
I think what an image or a panel I saw on the internet before I read this book, just kind of going around, was that shot of the spider shark bursting through the door and just knocking him on his ass is like an amazing panel.
Yeah.
Like out of context, yeah. It's fantastic. That's definitely hunting him. I mean, you're right, James. I think I got a vibe throughout this whole thing that even when they're saying we're going to learn later that these legs are actually mechanical and they've sort of just been covered up in like goo and pus to hide that like, even though it's random, there is some sort of like the emotion of the stench is like influencing it a little bit. I feel like just the later evolutions of this machine seem to have a sentience to it.
Yeah. Or it's like their nerve system, you know, it's wired into their nerve system. When you see those fungi that like this fungi took over an ant and made it.
Oh yeah.
Leaf, you know, like something like that involved potentially. So it's just biting, you know, it's just doing weird neurons firing or whatever.
Yeah, there's something that's compelling it, yeah. So the town of Okinawa is kind of, I do like in his stuff too that they let the people be aware of it, right? Like,
yeah.
It, especially, you know, to keep referencing, I don't think we'll ever be able to escape referencing Goosebumps on the show, that, you know, RL continuously just went to the well of like, if anyone besides these two kids know what's happening, the whole jig is up. Someone would just get a gun or call the cops. And I love that it feels more helpless, the fact that the news is reporting about this and like the government's aware of it and fishermen are seeing things, it just the scope of it. But like, who's going to help you then? You can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
Where does it go next from here? It's Tadashi just now is like, by the way, I have an uncle that's an inventor. Is that what it is?
They return to Tokyo.
Right.
They're like, let's go home from our really bad vacation and we'll be in Tokyo. We won't have to worry about it. Tokyo is away from everything. But then, like you said, there's like still news reports of like this is happening elsewhere. And then I don't remember what happens first. They definitely go and he visits his uncle, who is a mad scientist.
Yes, he's kind of already just leaned into the wild hair and just, big old eye. Yeah, he's up to something.
And then at some point, Carrie, she's like walking down this, she smells it, she's like, something's here, and then she sees the bag that had the dead fish in it floating after her.
It's like
which again made me think there was like a more sentient like, it's like, wow, they really have it out for her, something's going on with her that all these fish are trying to get to her. I don't think that's necessarily the case, though.
No, and it's so interesting. Like, I find just individual by itself, like a little spider fish in a plastic bag that is floating on presumably its own farts is like, it's kind of funny, but like, it's all serious and driving these people nuts. Yeah. It's just, I multiple times, James, you know, cause this is the first time we're really getting a chance to talk and at all was, I was like, I am really insecure that maybe I asked a guest who doesn't know me well to read this book about farts.
Oh no.
So
heavens no.
Thank you.
You felt that way about me?
Yeah, I mean,
I've heard a lot
of your work, but I, you know, maybe we've all changed over time. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, compared to like Uzumaki, where
the
idea of a spiral compelling people, like just a stinky smell is such an interesting shift. But they've captured the bad fish. It's like more rotten and awful, and they bring it to Tadashi's inventor uncle, who's like, oh, the sting's real good in this. Let me do some experiments.
Yeah.
Which I think at this point he's hiding, right, that he's seen this before, right? No,
he is, right? Because he goes, my father, I recognize the smell. I think when they bring him the fish, he goes, this smell, I know what this smell is. It's the death smell because my dad was an inventor too. And he went out into the shack in the back and had a heart attack and no one found him in a hot summer day for like, you know, a week. And when we finally found him, it stunk in there. And that's what this smells like.
Right. Yeah. Thank you. So he has an interest in it. And I think you mentioned kind of the dissection scene, which is coming up right after this. I don't know why, after this guy's like kind of like clawed out all of the fish into this like bear trap device, very like H.R. Giger kind of vibes to this thing. I was just like tubes and spikes. Why would you ever put your hand in it? Like, just don't. Just don't.
He wanted to see what it felt like.
Now, a young child or a teenage boy going, I could probably put my dick in that. I could maybe see some young hormonal boy doing that. But yeah, this guy, he puts his arm in it and it latches on. Sort of like, I'm trying to think of like a comp for it. But yeah, like bear traps on his arm and just starts digging in. I think we'll learn later that these, even Tadashi has been poked by it. But it starts the infection. There's a, it's like a bio germ.
Yes, yeah. They talk about the germs. There's some sort of germs that power the thing. There's a lot of explanations and none of them are like entirely coherent, but it doesn't really matter because there's just a lot that goes on. Because it, like we mentioned about the shark, it feels like there's a lot of rules being written on the fly, kind of like the Bible.
Thinking about it. Fuck, why did we write that Jesus died? We need to get ourselves out of this corner. What do we do?
Yeah, it's like a telephone game of rules. But it's still all very compelling. Like, you're like, what's going to happen next? Even if Ito doesn't know.
Yeah. I'd be curious. Yeah, it does feel like it builds up. And I guess, like, there are real world comps. And as we learn about, like, oh, this was meant to be a war weapon where we would, like, send in just nauseous animals. And there's an amazing shot of, like, dogs running past men in foxholes, like, freaking out as dogs just fart on them.
They were like, this is the most effective form of warfare is using fart gas. But they go, but if it's already farty, how can we get it in there? And they go, walking legs.
That's basically it. Well, this is like probably, I removed all of the war crimes this is part of, to be able to invent a thing that would create an infinite source of gas, it seems like. And like, this could change the energy industry, I feel like, right? Like, you could roll out a whole new line of green cars that are just powered by farting rats or something.
How would they sound when they're going under 10 miles an hour? Because we know how like electric cars sound. They have to make a noise. Otherwise, no one will hear them while they're crossing the street.
What
noise would we choose for the fart cars?
I think you just add like a fake fart button sound, just like burp, burp. Just like a little warning to people.
You can use a dial to choose your wetness.
Genuinely sounds more appealing than a Cybertruck, I have to say.
I agree.
There's real world comps, right? Of like, it breaks. I think you and I are both big animal lovers. Like, breaks my heart to think about using animals as weapons or those things. Like, we trained rats to have bombs on them and all of these failed ideas the militaries have tried in the past. Like,
have you ever seen the stuff about the pigeons?
Remind me, please.
The pigeon targeted missiles. This is like one of the worst ones, other than like sending the monkeys into space.
Oh yeah.
We got what we needed. Now for them to die alone as they keep hitting the food button. They would train these pigeons. I think they were pigeons or some sort of bird, to basically like, if they hit a point on a little screen, then they would get food. And they would just keep, so they trained them to hit the points, but then they slowly made the points look more and more like enemy warships. And then they would use the pigeon to recalibrate the missile. They would launch a missile and it would have a little camera that projected into a point inside, and the pigeon would just keep like more towards that. And if it veered left, it would go, no, 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 back to the right. Because it would just keep hitting the thing.
So it's like targeting the pigeon the whole time, right?
The pigeon was the targeting.
Oh my God, it's in the missile.
The pigeon was the targeting. And it would just slowly might do these micro recorrections to try and like make sure that it kept hitting this battleship.
Jesus,
and that to me is
Christ.
The worst one, because the pigeon is inside of the thing.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's doing a good job, right? Like the pigeons that live, well, none of them probably may survive, but the ones that do a bad job have a better chance. Oh my.
Yeah,
war is hell, dude.
War is hell.
I'm glad that, and maybe this is a strangeness, I'm glad we got away from like seeing like dogs and cats and rats with this fart gas. Like, somehow it being fish and sharks is easier to handle. I don't know if it makes me like a pescatarian or something. But we quickly get past the animals to Why does the hand, I guess the hand just got cut off, right? The uncle's hand is found, right? It's his hand?
Yeah, he, because it latches on, and I think he goes, I'll just cut off my hand.
Yeah, I guess at this point, you might as well not have the fart hand
for science
anymore. Yeah, this gross, like, pipes just kind of auto-latch in to feed off the bio-engineered gas that your body is producing to propel these legs. So, it's like the worst version of Thing from the Addams Family crawling after you.
Mm-hmm.
Uncle's like pretty chill about this. Like, you know, he's serious about it, but he's like, yeah, all right, well, that's my little pet now.
But again, when we met him, we were like, that's a psychopath. Like, the first time you see him, you're like, this guy's bad news.
That's true. Yeah. He's like, one thing I think is also interesting, and maybe I missed this in the book in the reread, but I have a big anxiety about not smells themselves, but getting used to a smell, right? Like, I'm always self-conscious of, like, does my house smell like dog real bad? And I'm just used to it, but my friends, when they come over, are like, it'd be rude to mention that you've gotten used to the smell. I don't think there's ever a time where, like, Tadashi is like, I've lived with it now. I'm good.
Yeah.
It's just a strong stench no matter what all the time.
Yeah.
Where does the story go from here, James? It goes into...
I remember around this time, because, of course, every single time she's like, I'm getting better, something happens. So she finds the hand.
Yes.
Right? And she freaks out, and then because she's losing her mind. And she also notices that she's, like, developing welts.
Right.
She's, like, getting, like, a weird skin reaction to all of this stuff that's happening.
Yeah, and Tadashi realizes he's been stabbed at least a couple times by this thing, too, right? Like, am I infected? I think you're building up to, so Tadashi smells the stench again, thinks the hand or the creature's back, and poor Kaori has just gone full fart cloud. Again, like, kind of leaning, I think Ito's great, I'm not trying to criticize too much, a little bit of, like, oh, the female character seems like vain about their looks. Would a boy character have that same reaction? I don't know.
Yeah.
But she's insecure and is just vomiting out fart stench, hates herself.
Yeah.
And we now have like a full on, we thought this was going, there is a full invasion of the land.
Yeah.
With fish creatures at this point.
That kind of happens around the same time, right? Like they're like, oh no, they've reached Tokyo. It's going crazy. People are losing their mind. It's like full scale. They're like, it's happening everywhere. And so there's fish. They can't stop the fish. The military are fighting them. And he's like, I got to go save her. But yeah, when he goes, she's like, don't come in here. And then he goes in and she is now covered in welts and pustules, and every time she opens her mouth, there's just a whoosh of whatever sound effect onomatopoeia he uses every single time of fart gas coming out of her mouth, and then also there is a shot of it clearly coming out of her butt too.
Oh, the one of the darkest, and again, I'm not trying to say that I think this is funny, but it feels like this should be a comedy almost. In Kaori kills herself, hangs herself. And then Ito draws, her body is swaying and spinning because she's farting out of her butt the whole time.
Yeah, she's spinning.
That's insane. How does this pop? There's millions of copies of this book of a spinning fart corpse. It's fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, there is a certain terror in like being like, imagine how ridiculous you're going to look even after you're done, right? Yeah. It's like, you know, it's like falling out of a coffin or whatever. You're like, you're not even there to see how humiliated you were.
Oh, that's right. And thankfully, I guess she lives. I don't know. At this point, maybe I would say, just let me die. Tadashi.
Yeah.
Tadashi saves her. They're pursued by...
She tries to take her to the hospital, right?
Which I don't know what the doctor's like, what do you want us to do? Antibiotics. The another shark. I mean, at this point in my mind, it's just still somehow the same shark spider has rebuilt itself and is coming after them.
Yeah.
Chases them through the halls or the streets of Tokyo. I'm trying to remember where it goes from here.
I think he loses her because a squid gets him, right? Is this the squid point?
Like
a squid grabs him
and
then throws him into like a ditch filled with dead fish.
I think that's coming up. Yeah, because now re-look at the book. Yeah, it's right before. Yeah, they hopped a wall to join the shark. There's a quick little like run into the uncle's lab assistant. The Kiori is already like, you're in love with her now too, right? Because she's pretty,
right.
Not
yeah,
me.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Then we get the big old squid, which terrifying. It it seems like they are still alive, right? That's also part of the horror of...
Yeah.
It's naturally kind of just trying to understand what it is and lashing out. Yeah, and throws Tadashi into a big old pit of little fish bugs. He is stabbed so much.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of the to your point of like, how is this already falling into it? I think while Tadashi's laying in the pit, he sees... Maybe it's a hallucination, but he's seeing like spirits in the fart gas, like faces.
Yeah. Oh, yes. The spirits in the fart gas. That's the faces of death or whatever, right? Like it's the stench of death and all the manifestation of that is we thought our souls were this other thing, but it's actually our souls are actually fart gas.
Can you imagine if someone having a belief of like, oh, every you know, there's like people. I was taught when I was a kid, if this is true at all, like. Indigenous people had belief that like if you took a photo of someone with a camera, it like robbed a part of your soul. I don't know if that's true at all, but it was told to me as a kid. Is this the thing of like, yeah, every time a fart escapes out, a little bit of your soul goes out. That's why you should never
maybe
fart. Yeah.
That's why you got to keep it in.
You got to keep it in. Yeah, you lose a little bit of yourself.
Or what if you care about someone and you want to intertwine your soul? Should you Dutch oven them?
Well, yeah, Dutch oven, and also like you should put your buttholes next to each other and exchange the farts, I think.
Yeah.
This is one of the grossest episodes of Goosebumps I've ever done.
Hold on, wait. You can cut this if you want to.
No, please go for it.
But leave in the part where I say you can cut this if you want to. But when you were a kid, did you ever do that thing where you like had your butt in the air and then your face down and you were like, can I breathe in through my butthole?
No! Wait.
You never did the reverse.
So wait, instead of like, can I suck my own dick? You're trying to like, can I breathe in through my butthole? Is that the challenge?
It's like, can you create a reverse vacuum from your butthole? And the answer is you cannot.
No.
But I'm
impressed you like, tried and you got to the point where you could pull it off. I mean, that's
science, you know?
Yeah, or at least.
I'm great.
Well, now we're getting into what the sheer insanity of how stupid any human centipede would work would be like, yeah, those pipes don't work that way, right?
Yeah.
Was he, I think he was leaving, I never saw a human centipede. I think the nose nostrils were connected, so you could breathe yourself.
You could breathe through your own nostrils. I have seen the first two human centipedes.
Oh my God, you went for the second?
Well, I'll say this. The first human centipede is a pretty... not good movie, but there's good things about it, right? Like some of the direction and the tone, the pace at which it unfolds is like genuinely scary. The gimmick of the human centipede is terrifying. Like it's terrifying, the thought of like that being the fate of things. But the guy who plays the doctor, it's a great performance from him.
Oh yeah, just the images I've seen from him. He does have maybe what the kids say aura. It looks like.
Yes, he's got aura. Aura fist. he's really good. And I remember when I saw it, I was like, oh, well, I'm excited to see what this director does next without feeling like he needs to do the shock element of the human centipede premise. Like, I bet he could make something like really scary that doesn't rely on this. And I watched Human Centipede 2, and I was like, that was the worst thing I've ever seen in my whole life.
Was it just going back to that well again?
It was devoid of any of the subtleties or the nuance of the first one. It was tripled down on just the horrificness of it. It has some of the worst things ever. It's not compelling in any way. It's just more. It is. It's not worth anything.
So...
conflicted emotions there with Human Centipede. They could breathe through their nose.
That's good. That's good for it. With that in mind, before we get into the fate of the next part of it, let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back for the second half of Gyo.
Member Week is here at Lowe's. Don't miss your chance to get up to 40% off hundreds of items like paint, stain, tools, flooring, and more. Shop our exclusive deals happening in-store and online from May 8th through May 14th. Not a member? Join MyLowe's Pro Rewards for free today and get ready to save more. Lowe's, we help you save. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
have, at this point, a full-blown fart epidemic going on. Mm-hmm. Tadashi is starting to hang out with the beautiful Miss Yoshiyama.
Well, the big thing here is he's in that pit, and then he has that dream, and then he wakes up in the hospital.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh my gosh, what happened? You've been out for like a month or more, like, right? Like, isn't...
Oh, yeah, like, you're right. We have a time passage. Yeah. And he's not infected like everyone else has. I guess they got him some antibiotics.
Yeah, it's like a month. And I remember at that point, I was like, whoa, that's a long time. There's a lot of things transpiring, so this time jump is pretty wild.
Yeah, that's right. He martial law is declared. He walks out of the hospital and just sees an amazing image of a tank following a swordfish on legs. Like, it's just full on, this is what our life is like now.
Yeah.
Yeah, he comes back home, and Tadashi is like, hey, what happened to Kaori? He's like, we should introduce you to your girlfriend.
Well, the doctor, his uncle, is like, she's dead. Unfortunately, she passed away, and that's it. And then the assistant, who was like, I can't lie to you, and then shows him, right?
Oh,
like,
you're right. You're right. Like, yeah, which I guess maybe the uncle was, I don't know if the uncle was trying to be kind there, or just like, I want this experiment to continue and don't want you involved.
I think he might be psychotic.
Yeah, I think so, maybe. But it leads to an amazing page of opening the lab and seeing Kaori beyond recognition, mm-hmm. looking more like a frog than a human, strapped to what looks like a Dr. Robotnik machine. You know, like a little pod that would attack Sonic on the second or third level, except for the detail that Kaori has tubes running into her mouth and her butt, just like full on, yep. just seeing her spread butt and a tube going up there, farting gas everywhere. Tadashi, understandably upset.
Yeah, this is the part for me, which again, we're like 2/3 into the book at this point. But this is the part for me where I was like, OK, this is creepy. These are the things about his storytelling that creep me out more so. The fish apocalypse, I was like, I'm not sure where this is going, but it feels like there's a little bit maybe more action than there is fear.
Yeah.
But this is when it like feels like it officially turns and goes like full on Ito, like the crumpled position that she's in, like her twisted, contorted body.
Yeah.
Trapped, unmoving, and blank eyes, but still like a consciousness there.
Oh yeah,
like, that's the nightmare stuff.
I don't know if we've mentioned this. I think it's been established at this point that you essentially are paralyzed, right? Like your body, like kind of like locks down. So yeah, you're locked in syndrome. You're kind of gets into another version of being trapped in Amagawa Fault, right? Like you're just sort of awake and aware of the nightmare. I love this stuff of even though. To your point earlier, like, even though it's just kind of self-propelling these robots, there is some sort of logic to what it's doing, right? Like, mm-hmm. Tadashi tries to free Kaori. Kaori knocks him aside and goes straight for just spearing the uncle in the stomach.
Yeah.
That feels intentional. That doesn't feel like an accident.
Yeah, oh yeah. Which is funny, too, because the uncle is like, it's okay, I built this machine. She's under my complete control. And then as soon as she's able, she stabs him.
Hell yeah, Kaori, get your revenge. Yeah. I think I'm trying to understand, like, the fish are dying and the gas is like wearing out, so there's sort of a dead, like a time limit, but Tadashi runs across one of the big robot legs where like there's just kind of rotten material in it.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's trying to imply that like eventually Kaori would get out, I guess.
Well, I thought it was that like they basically run the organic material is the fuel to run the machines, and it just basically runs them into nothing. So these fish, they would come on with the fish, but then they would just run the fish until it was literally a decomposed husk. And then I thought in my mind, it was like, then it's available to grab something else if it can.
Oh, I see. I think you're right. It's kind of like awaiting like a trap for another source to infect. No, that reminds me. It's a cool idea. I think, did you ever read Max Brooks's The Zombie Survival Guide?
I did, yes.
I love that book. It has, you know, mm-hmm. very different than his other book, World War Z, and then the movie that had nothing to do with it. But like, I think what I really liked about that book when I was younger was, and I got to talk to him in college at one point. He came to a lecture and it was really fun to chat with him about, how much like rational science he was applying to a thing without being kind of like cinema sins about it, you know, like, mm-hmm. but just like, okay, here, you know, in a real world with zombies, here would be like the best tool in the world. is this like sharp bladed shovel machete thing to both dig and hurt zombies, or likewise, like him theorizing that eventually zombies would run out of muscle mass, right? Like if they're not consuming new nutrients, you could just sort of burn them out over time. It, you know, I guess it's been established before in some zombie stories, but like I liked sort of diving into that. Like we're doing we've gotten to the chapter I think called The Inheritors, which is essentially right just saying like this is the world of the fart spiders now. You're right. You already saw like we see a new sort of open spider thing catching a big farting guy. Everyone's sort of like chubby. I'm assuming that's gas. Just like
It's like the disease, the germ or whatever, like causes them to bloat and become like Pillsbury Doughboys, essentially.
Oh, yeah. He would probably be a good old, like he's like got that yeast and dough in him. He would be like a good little.
You have to make the butthole, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
I'm
yeah.
I'm sure the machine wouldn't be opposed to.
After this episode, I might write a letter to Pillsbury like, hey, just want to know canonically, does the Doughboy have a butthole or not? Just need to know for research purposes. Will you guys please weigh back in? I want to like skip past sad dog being manipulated. Yeah. I don't know if you're the same way, but like I can see just like gruesome things happen to humans and have a very not big reaction to it. If a single animal is in danger, I'm not on board.
It's way more effective. It's because they don't understand.
They don't know. Yeah.
They don't know. And the last thing you want to think, like them to think, is that they did something wrong.
Oh,
like,
I know.
No, you're perfect. You're perfect. You didn't do anything wrong.
You did nothing wrong to be in a fart spider. There's like the Catherine the Great sequel movie with Cate Blanchett. I doubt no one saw it, but it's about like the sinking of the Spanish Armada. And it was like an hour of just thousands of troops dying at naval battle and sea and the ship starting to burn. And there was like one shot of, oh, there are some horses on the boat and the boat's going down. I was like, now I care. Now I care that there's two horses on
there's
here.
There's stakes.
Yeah. Yeah. We're back on the humans on this. What is this? Like Tadashi's wandering around. He's been throwing rocks at some of these. He's still, I don't think we know still yet what these things are, right? Like there's the theory, like where they came from.
Yeah. I don't, right. I don't think so.
No, yeah, the uncle's like made kind of, we understand how it works a little bit, but like the source of it. And Tadashi's just like stepping on one, he gets stabbed again. This dude will not turn into a fart zombie though. He has got something going on. What do we hit? Like a big, like homunculus golem spider thing,
right.
Like what held a whale, now has like a hole on an improv troop's worth of men.
Hold on. Okay, so if you mention an improv troupe,
yes.
Now we have to name them. That's the rule.
Yeah, and the hair isn't an improv funny troupe enough. Yeah,
that exists without a punny name.
Yeah, would they lean into their death stench? Like, would that be part of it?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to like think. I'm trying to think of something.
Art house cinema or something. You know, like
art house cinema or like. Riot gas.
Riot gas is pretty good. Oh, I like that one. Yeah. Doing the black box at UCB.
Yeah.
Did you ever? I know you've done stand up, James. You ever do improv?
Every day of my life.
Just kidding around. This life is improv.
I have never done like formal UCB Groundlings training. Like I've never went to classes, but I mean, like what I did for a living was essentially an improv game.
Yeah.
Like three times a day, every single day. And I did it prior in college. I was a drama major, so I did stuff like that in college.
Right on.
And I was a drama major, and then I finished taking all the performance classes, and they were like, all right, the next phase of your academic career is supporting with the plays. Like, you basically have to wear the black shirts and, like, do stagehand stuff.
Oh, interesting.
That's how they get the workforce. And I was like, no, thank you. So I dropped it. I dropped it and then just took a creative writing instead. But yes, so anyway, I have not formally done improv classes, but I feel pretty confident that
I also think that's one of the most fascinating parts once I started to get a little bit into more indie wrestling of like, how much of that on the mat is improv mm-hmm. versus like, well, we had a kind of a planned flow to our fight beforehand versus like either like a botch happened or something's gone wrong, someone's injured themselves. Like, how do we now yeah. improvise the story? I think is really cool.
A lot of it is like, is the audience vibing?
Yeah.
You can come up with something in the back, but then you might be like, oh, wait a minute. They're not ready for the baby face, the good guy, to like come back yet. He hasn't taken enough damage, or maybe I'm hurting him for too long. I generally wrestle as a heel, so the hardest part of my job is I give heat, which is basically making the mm-hmm. good guy look like he's gonna lose and making the audience want him to win. The finding the exact perfect amount of time to give that without making people like, I'm bored.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
if you've ever seen Hulk Hogan in a sleeper hold, the amount of time that he sits there like he's gonna pass out before he always rises back up, uh-huh. it's like that's improvised timing. Like, you can't be like, I'll be down there for 5 seconds. So it's interesting.
No, yeah. Or I some of my favorite stuff is like seeing big professional ones where it's like, you already kind of mentioned it, that like this is supposed to be a big pop for Roman Reigns and the crowd is not feeling it, right?
Yeah.
And like seeing that sort of, oh my God, they're booing him. Like, oh yeah, it's really cool. Even stand-up, you don't get like, I don't think I see many stand-ups other than like the highest levels of them able to roll with the energy, right? Like there's a really great old clip of, I don't know if you ever saw James, Bill Burr in like Philly from like 10 or 15 years ago. And it's kind of the perfect level of like taking maybe what you'd say the heat of like, it's one of those, like, he's doing some sort of festival for like one of those like shock jock shows, like Opie and Anthony or something, which, you know, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But like the crowd has apparently just been booing and jeering at every comic that goes up. And Bill Burr, not super famous yet, just goes up and decides kind of essentially to go full heel. And essentially is like, I got 15 minutes. I'm going to use 15 minutes. Let me tell you how awful your sports teams are. And like, and he leans into it so perfectly. Honestly, James and listeners, you got to look it up. It's so good. By the end of it, the crowd loves him. Like, it's just, he sways the entire to vibe to it. Anyway.
Jose, how do you think Bill Burr would have looked with fart gas shooting out of his
mouth? Oh my God. Oh yeah. I mean, he already.
Speaking of Philly, this place smelled like shit.
Well, you know, my brain right now is focused on Tadashi has wandered into a fart circus, I believe, is the next thing.
Yeah, I started getting very confused. I was like, I do not know what the fart gas does anymore. And why is there a fart circus? This definitely felt a little bit like filler.
He had
a deadline to hit. He had to get the next chapter out, and he had no idea where to go. But still fun. Some fun imagery.
There's a clown using like fart gas to lift up a balloon. There's the instruments are being played by the fart, it seems like. Like the whistle that you see the fart gas going through a clown playing the flute. And a fart cannon.
There's a point where the ringmaster's like, behold our band, they look like a regular band, but nay, they are powered entirely by farts. And you're like, oh, I guess they are.
Yeah, all right. I mean, I would have been fine with just normal lung energy, but fine.
You're like, so it is Maroon 5.
Got him. Brings up a good question near the end of this, is that one of the final acts is a clown, what would you call it? Like not a pyromancer, it's like a fantasy class. Fire breather.
Yeah.
Essentially just ignites the entire sky in cool death zombie flames. It's unclear if like only Tadashi is seeing this or everyone is.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's freaked out by it, pursued. I don't know how you're making money on this, right? I don't know what the circus guy's like end game is.
No, it's for fun. It's for funsies.
It's a little bit of a Dead Rising antagonist, right? They're like, I'm just running this grocery store in the zombie apocalypse.
He's like, before the fart apocalypse, I could never be the ringmaster of a fart circus. But now I can.
I can't turn down this. I can't turn down this opportunity. They bring out the next attraction. It is Kaori. They have captured Kaori. I don't know why she would be an attraction, to be honest. There's a bunch of these ones all over the place, but maybe they just thought.
Well, but she's more, she's different, right? Like her legs are different. All the rest of them all have come from the undersea.
Oh, you're
legs,
right.
Hers
right.
are like the one made modern legs or whatever.
Yeah. She...
So I interpreted it that is that they were like, oh, she's different. So that's why they were showing her off.
You're right. She's cutting edge. She also has fart. I mean, this seems a little poop. She's got some sort of bile cannons.
Yes. Yes. She has bile cannons. I forgot she had bile cannons.
It's cool of the uncle to build those for her. I don't know if they're supposed to be a spit valve or what. Tadashi, she breaks free. Tadashi carries, shuts down the machine and carries her all the way over to out of the circus into the hills. She can't speak at all. That's hell. At this point, like, just kill me, right? Like, let.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want to be around anymore. Brings Kaori back to the doctor's assistant. They do further exams. One of the grossest things is you're seeing how like Kaori's mouth is sort of like latched on to the tubes going into her mouth. There's like no way to.
Oh, yeah.
It's like when like people like bond to a chair for sitting there too long. I don't even know if that's a real thing or not, but it feels like that's an urban legend you hear about.
I think it is real.
Yeah, it's probably real.
It is real.
I should probably get out of my chair sometime today.
Uh-oh. Careful. Be careful. Get a spatula.
That is, that's very, very vivid. Yeah, what happens next? Tadashi, I think, is just like, oh, we're hanging out here now. I'm going to go find my uncle, right?
Yeah, right. They were like, did they hear? Can't remember if they hear a noise or something. And they're like, yeah, unfortunately, he's succumbed to his wounds, but he didn't want anyone to see him. He said, whatever you do, don't come in here. I'm going to die in the hot Tokyo sun, just like my father and his father before him.
This actually kind of a Goosebumps book of stay out of the basement. It's like stay out of the fart barn.
Yeah.
To describe, the uncle has strapped himself into what seems like another original device. Really cool design as far as these gross things go, where it's like it's dual wielding. It's got like he's attached to it, but it's got a... like a clutch thing to pick up other people.
Yeah. It's like a flying machine.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
He's got wings and stuff.
Yeah. He's built a whole blimp, launches himself out, and is now firing poo gas at Tadashi and the assistant.
Yeah.
Again, this leads into like, did they ever establish like why he would want to do that?
I mean, I guess if you see where the trend is going, this is his way of being like, it's like his pyramids.
Sure.
You know? Like,
yeah.
He's building, he won't be around to enjoy it, but he wants to make sure that we get to enjoy it.
Yeah. He's the best one out of all of them, right?
Yeah.
And, I think I skipped over it, but, like, it already been, Tadashi is told, like, your girlfriend Kaori is definitely dead. But, surprise, Kaori, deep in there, we see, like, some really gross shots of her, like, moldy pus eyes, seeing Tadashi holding the assistant and sort of, like, jealous and angry and lashing out.
She anyone else would be dead, but not Kaori. She's still jealous.
But yeah, the power compels her to keep going on through, driving her away. And it's just tough for this lady, right? She's not done anything wrong. She's not really making moves on Tadashi as far as I picked up on.
No.
But wouldn't you know it, big old Uncle Blimp comes in and just snatches her up. I kind of theorize maybe he wanted her in there, and that's why he built the second latch.
Maybe. Yeah.
It carries Miss Yoshiyama, the assistant, away. Kaori is just kind of cluttering around, just the girlfriend you can't quit, you know? You just can't.
Yeah, I know.
Can't get rid of her.
That's what I call a toxic relationship.
Why do they attack Kaori? The rest of the fish monsters like descend on her. Is it because she's just different than them?
Maybe. I don't know. I think some of it may have been because Ito's like, I gotta wrap this up.
It's gotta get to. Again, we've written 300 pages of a death gas.
He's like, I got my wife and daughters banging on my office door asking if I've written the co-female lead well. I gotta wrap this up, seal it in a manila envelope, and get it off to the publisher's staff.
Kaori is descended upon by a horde. I something funny about like amongst all these humans, just one big old cow
mm-hmm.
is in there. Tadashi is just wandering. He's like the only living guy in this whole place. For some reason, the circus shows up and goes to war with Tadashi's uncle.
Yeah, they fire a man at him.
Pulled by a train of other fart spider people. They just fire it into the air. It takes out the blimp, but wouldn't you know it, Uncle's thought about this. He built a glider. Mm-hmm. He is now going to slowly fly around, still clutching this woman, poor assistant, in his arms. Actually, even though I read this recently, I'm trying to remember, how does this wrap up, James? Please, if you don't mind carrying us to the end.
If I recall, there's like a whole pilgrimage of these robots going, but also some of them have worn themselves down. And then there's like a group of students, right? Who call out to Tadashi and they're like, yeah, look at all those robots. And there's just like, basically they come to the conclusion that there's just a handful of people who are immune to the germs and not affected. And so then I think it ends with them going like, don't you want to come to the university with us? Cause we're working on a cure. And then he's like, I will, but I'm going to hang out with whatever's left of my really toxic relationship.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. He's like, yeah, you don't smell the bad smell anymore. And that's it. I forgot. That's just the end of it.
Yeah. He like finds her body or something somewhere. And he's like, oh, that's a shame. You should have never gone to the coast.
That's it.
Oh, yeah. His whole thing is he goes, at least she can't smell anymore. That's like the final piece is he goes, well, she can't smell anymore.
She found some peace. I don't think so. I think that was a nightmare for her and everyone involved. And yeah, the world is, they don't really show too much of the, like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of the 20 days later version where you get a hint that like it's broken free and you're seeing containment in America or whatever. But it sure sounds like somehow, I guess the fish just like all infected other fish and they went across the ocean. And this is the world we live in now.
Yeah. Yes.
James, what would you do in this? Let's say you're Tadashi, your girlfriend is
I'm immune.
You're immune. Do you what do you think your plan of attack is? How do you try to live your life now?
I mean, first things first, I'm ending that relationship. Mm-hmm. We're not we don't even make it back to Tokyo together.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. I go, what else do you want me to do? I put the thing in the bag. I smashed it with a rock. I got my hand and you're the one complaining that I need to brush my teeth. This is not going to work. So a lot of the drama that he dealt with, I probably wouldn't have to incur.
Sure.
I think the only maybe thing that I would have majorly changed is I probably would have hung around that circus to see what else was going on. Like,
yeah, maybe there's more acts to it. Yeah.
You know, I would have maybe been like, okay, they've only been working on this for maybe a month max, right? Mm-hmm. Like how long? And they already have the guy in the cannon and they got the fart band. Like I might try and get involved business wise with the circus. But yeah, I don't know. These situations are funny because that's what I always do with horror or almost anything. I go, what would I do in this situation?
Yeah.
And when there's a great white shark, like, smashing down your door and you like Tadashi, I would say, does several things where he's like, I'm trying to get out of this, and he just, oh, a squid got me. Mm-hmm. You know, like he doesn't really screw up too much except in that relationship.
So. No, yeah, he should have said, yeah, I mean, I guess he could have sent some signs with his uncle, but I get it. You're giving him the benefit of the doubt a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, in the world where, let's say you're jumping to the end of this, you're in, I don't even know what I would do. You're in this hell world now, The Last of Us, except with farts. Mm-hmm. What do you do? Do you go to Kyoto? Do you just try to live your life? Do you give yourselves up to the horde of stench inheritors?
I would join the resistance at the university in Kyoto while secretly relaying messages, playing both sides.
When somewhere there's a whale just like intercepting messages, yeah. Good, there's a collective of humans.
Hedging my bets by making sure that I was aligned with both what's left of humanity and the robot fart walkers.
I think I'd probably do something. I don't know if I'd play both sides, James. It's proud of, you know, brave of you to admit. I think I'd be looking into some way of like, can I just have my butthole sewed shut? Like, can I just make sure that doesn't happen?
Yeah.
Like Carl from Mockerton Hunger Force, just fill all my holes with glue and just don't think about the consequences of it.
Yeah, yeah.
I honestly forgot the ending. Just it doesn't peter out, but like it does really peak at circus fighting flying uncle to just, all right, well, here's what we do now. Goodbye.
Yeah.
And Amigawa Fault right after it does really sort of like retake over your memory and leave an impression on it.
Well, there's one other story too in the book, which I had never read before.
Yeah,
which I thought was great. It's like, because I just was like just flipping the pages, and it's the sad tale of the principal post.
Yeah, which like, is just, okay. He got crawled into the crawl space and just got crushed by a beam.
Yeah, essentially it's funny because you're like, I can't wait to see it. This Gyo takes so much time to unfold the story and build on itself. And this one is, hey, thanks for inviting us for dinner. Your house is real nice. And they're like, yeah, we just finished building it. And they go, Dad's screaming. And then they go down to the crawl space and he's underneath the main support pillar. And they're like, how did you do this? And he's like, there's no time to explain. Whatever you do, let me die down here because this house is too important.
Yeah.
And it's a very thinly veiled metaphor for this man killing himself so that way his family can live in a house or whatever. But it's like a page and a half long.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I was like, how is this going to unfold? Are we going to find out that the house is haunted? Or is he, I thought, is he going to they'll let him die. He'll say, save me, though, but the house, and then they'll let him die, and then he'll haunt
house. You'll start to see his face in the walls or something.
Something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You literally just turn the page, and it's just a picture of his skeleton.
The little ritual they put up, like a little like,
yeah. They're like they stayed with him for the next 15 minutes until he passed away, and then it's just a skeleton like halfway down, smushed beneath this giant pillar, and then it goes like, someone may find this someday, and they'll wonder what the hell happened. I was like, wow, okay.
It's such a funny image because there's no like, oh, the supports broke, and I was trying to get the wiring. It just really seems like there was a 5-inch. Gap and he decided to crawl under it. It was like, fuck, god damn it, oh shit.
Not
the strongest of, but I do like what Ito does in general of some version of like reflecting on, I guess, like societal, cultural, you know, opinions stuff, right? I feel like Uzumaki does a lot of like, what does the spiral mean to a dad that has like nothing going on? He gets obsessed with whatever, like making pottery.
Yeah.
The couple that is obsessed with each other, what if they entwine themselves together? I don't know. Like, is there a thing for Gyos? I don't know. I really don't. War crime? Like, you know, using like the pigeon sort of thing you talk about? Is it just sort of like a takedown of that?
There's definitely a take on the weaponization and like war stuff, but I mean, it's that's so far removed from this story that it's like, repercussions. Like you could kind of say anything. But in terms of like Tadashi's point of view and like his experience, I'm trying to figure out what he's supposed to have learned from all of this.
Yeah.
And I don't know that there is necessarily something.
Yeah, it's like almost like Kaori had the arc only in that she hated smells and she was haunted by smells and then she didn't smell anymore. Like I don't really know if that counts as an arc. But I'm surprised. I get why they adapted Uzumaki into an anime and not Gyo.
Well, I'm looking on Wiki. Apparently, they did. There is an OVA.
Oh, really?
There's a 75 minute adaptation of Gyo.
I didn't even realize. Yeah, I will definitely watch. Yeah. Did you watch the Uzumaki anime that Adult Swim made? By the way,
I was really excited, and then I heard about it, and then I didn't.
Yeah, that first episode's pretty solid, and it's just like the budget just dropped off a cliff and different animation studio, and it's a shame because it was so distracting. I don't even think I could fix on the story at all.
Yeah, it's wild. I know that someone from that studio came out and they're like, yeah, I don't know, the funding completely dropped out.
We wanted
to cancel it, but like we couldn't cancel it, so this is literally the best version we could make in Flash or whatever.
I saw one of the producers or something was like, well, we knew the first episode was good, and so almost like out of service to that, we decided to air the whole thing. I was like, I think you guys could just air the first episode and just cut your losses. But the one thing they do different on that one, not to make this now an Uzumaki discussion, we can wrap up, but is they made a small change in that. What I really liked about Uzumaki was individual short stories, right? Like Maybe there's a little bit of threaded stuff, but it's like, here's the 20 pages on the couple. Here's the 20 pages on the girl with the hair. And then in the show version, it was like, well, since these are all happening at the same time in this town, let's have the stories intersect. That didn't personally actually help me. I kind of found it annoying that we would like stop momentum in one story to jump to the other. But I get the compulsion to maybe do so.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I want to watch this far for it. Otherwise, I mean, James, I think that was Gio. Other thoughts, other observations or things you wanted to share about this book having read it?
I mean, I kind of mentioned it earlier, but just I'm always so impressed the combination of being like, wait, so they drew this? Like,
yeah.
You're like flipping through these pages. There's so much happening on like one page. Have you ever read Berserk?
Oh, I've just started reading Berserk recently. I really loved it.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Okay, please stay in touch with me about that. It's great. It's fantastic. It's one of the best things I've ever consumed. Pieces of media. And that happens a lot with manga. I always say One Piece is one of the best pieces of media I've ever consumed. The manga. I've never watched the anime.
That's one of my big blind spots is I've never yet read a One Piece. I gotta read One Piece.
It's huge. It's massive. And I, at this point, I'm probably like 200 volumes behind wherever it is because I haven't read it in years. But when I read it up to a certain point, I was like, the ability to like do this consistently month after month, week after week, tell a story without end that doesn't feel like you're winging it is so impressive to me. And so I always give these mangaka like extreme amounts of credit because even if like some of the dialogue is a little clunky or whatever, like you're like, why is there a circus? Like you still go like, look at this page.
Yeah.
Like, look how many pieces of art you made for this. And the detail when they're fixated on something and they just like put so much detail into it just so that way you can look for like five seconds.
Oh, I know. I feel so guilty when I'm just scanning across it. Like, wait, hold on. I need to look at the backgrounds of this.
Yeah.
The last one of those. It's crazy. Berserk, definitely, for sure. I want to keep reading. The last one I've recommended a lot on our Discord for Goosebuds that I am constantly shocked with is the manga for Dandadan. I don't know if you've read that one at all, James.
Okay. I have not.
The anime kind of took off, and it's still really fun, but I think the manga has to be read. And just like this artist and his team are putting out gorgeous panels and pages, every couple of weeks. I can't believe you guys are getting away with this. You might enjoy it. It's tonally very different, but there's a short film made by the creator of Chainsaw Man called Look Back.
Okay.
It's like kind of a fictional nonfiction story. I don't want to spoil it for you, based on like some real events that happened in Japan about two fictional teenage students who bond over making manga comics. And it's all about the dedication to the craft. Like I saw it with a bunch of artists from my team on Avatar, and by the end of the movie, just like tears from everyone of just like how much this is a love letter to the power of comics and like dedicating your life to, you know, this is one of the artists of the two is like, she's just really good at backgrounds. Like, what that contribution is to the story. Highly, highly recommend if you can track down a copy.
Add it to my list.
Look Back, man. It'll get you. It's really, really good. But James, thank you for joining me, man. Like, again, I've been such a fan of your work for so long. It's great to get to talk to you. And this is not what I would imagine getting to talk to you about besides Gio, but I'm glad we got to use this as a framing work for it.
No, yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. You know, to any of the Goosebuzz listeners not familiar with the stuff, like beyond just like socials and stuff, like what are you working on now that people should check out? I know like, you know, Funhouse has kind of gone through some transformations and different groups have gone different directions. Like what are you working on now? What do you want to like, you know, hype up and put people's eyes on?
Yeah. Well, so I just, as of last week, or I guess I don't know when people hear this, but as a couple weeks ago, launched a new podcast myself.
Yes.
I had been doing a live show in Los Angeles where it's kind of like almost a British panel show style, which is a format that I really enjoy. But it allows me to do a little bit of stand-up comedy and, you know, come up with funny questions. It's a trivia show, but the premise is that if you don't know the answer to the question, you can write in a funny one. And if the audience reacts, then I'll give you points as though it were correct. And so I've been doing that show. I've done four of those shows in LA, but I have so much fun doing that now Elise, my wife, has started producing a
podcast adaptation, a way more casual. It's way more like hanging out. It's myself, Elise Willems, who finds all the questions, and then Zach Anner, who you should look him up. He's great.
Oh, yeah, I love his stuff, too. And Elise is hilarious as well. I love both of their works.
Yeah. He's a great writer and comedian. And then our other friend, AJ LoCascio, who's a very funny writer and comedian, but he's mostly known as a voice actor. Mm-hmm. He's the voice of Gambit in X-Men 97.
Which is pretty rad.
He's in the Voltron show. He's the voice of Gizmo in the new Mogwai series.
Oh, cool. I didn't know that. Awesome.
Yeah. And so he's done so much. He was Marty McFly in the Telltale games.
Oh, that's right.
So
he was
much.
The one that like, wow. Like I remember when he kind of popped up, it was like, look at this actor that is just absolutely nailing Marty McFly. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. That's
so he's really good. He does impressions like, or voice mimicry and stuff like that. He's Han Solo in Lego Star Wars. So, he has an extremely storied career as a voice actor, but he's also a close friend of ours. And so the four of us get together. Elise finds strange, weird, obscure, funny trivia, pitches it to us, and then we kind of out loud spin up what we think is a funny answer.
Oh, right? Yeah.
And so
yeah.
It's very conversational. It's called Answer For It. And yeah, you can basically find it wherever you listen to podcasts.
I listened to the first episode. It's such a brilliant idea. And I think that comp to British panel shows is a great one. I've been obsessed with Taskmaster recently and totally could see y'all working in that space. That's fantastic.
Taskmaster is fantastic. Yeah, building something out like that would be incredible. But yeah, so that's basically what I've been up to, other than the occasional professional wrestling match. And then I do some video game writing on the side as well.
That's all. I mean, James, thanks for being on, man. You know, you're kind of part of a new transition into the show where I've been doing it solo hosting and getting to bring people on just to talk about stuff that they love. Or I don't want to make you say on the spot that you loved Gio, but at least the works of Junji Gio has been like a really refreshing thing for me. And just want to thank the listeners for rolling with Goosebuds as we transition into this third wave of the show. It means a lot for everyone listening to it. If you like the show and want to support it and get access to a bunch of our Discord with a really cool community, along with bonus episodes called Camp Goosebuds, where me and other people hang around and shoot the shit, or now kind of transitioning into a bonus episode called Goosebuds Theater, where I'll, like Mystery Science Theater, kind of like hang out and watch something new and talk with fans about it. On top of that, you get access to all of our episodes ad-free, and it supports the show and keeps it running. You can go to patreon.com/goosebuds. It means a lot, and it's why we're about to hit 200 episodes. It's because of listeners, supporters like you. James, it was a huge pleasure to have you on, man. I hope to run into you in other spaces. I definitely want to talk to you about Berserk more. And,
yeah.
Whether it's another Junji Ito or something like that, hope you come back for another time, so, man.
Yeah, just let me know. Let me know. I'm happy to do it. This is great.
Well, thanks again, everyone. Y'all have a good one. And I guess just like keep your buttholes tight and watch out for spiky fish.
Stay gassy.
No way.
Tadashi, what was that?
Shh, be quiet. Don't worry. It'll go away.
This episode of Goosebuds is brought to you by our wonderful Patreon supporters, forever immortalized in the Book of Names. Starting with Low Belly Hate Me, Hollis Hornbeak, Nathan Dozal, Mickey C, Hey Josh Rob, Afshin, Stealth, A Beautifully Fleshed Skeleton Bates, Robert Moon, Jason Crooker, DM me, I'll tell you about the Rite Aid fraud. I gotta know what's going on at this Rite Aid. The Juggalobalist. Aiden is doing shots of Skittles Littles. Gregory D. Warren. Jar Jar Slinks. See the new Jar Jar in Fortnite? He's a Sith now. The meme is real. Chosen One. The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. Yanni Markovina. Carl. Carl, do you get sick if I'm doing the Llamas with Hats reference when I say your name like that? That's what I'm doing every time. Let me know if that's okay. Brooke X. Anthony Mulberry, Christian Van Skeever, Jeremy Lowe, Zach Connor, Tevin Ticklebeam whispers, rich people are a scam, and releases the arrow. I know, I fly true arrow, fly true. Matt McClellan, Luke, Juan Jalapena, Matthew Sutton, Russell Kasberg, Xavier Jimenez Castillo, Kelsey Kinneman, Tobias Clark, Rena Kemp, MC Hamster, Limp Duck, Jonas Blatterman, Chris Not Illegal to Type Guillotine Schematics, and you see that video of the guy like, oh, I'm cutting up lemons with a guillotine? Fucking rocks. Lamb! Jonas Ennevildsen. Woof, 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 woof. Kieran McNamara. Coleman Laguza. Diet Soda. A Pair of Scots. Meta for the Metaphor. New music coming soon. You better post that in the Discord, Meta. You better do that. Zambambino. Streak! Iroh Forte. Sounds like Robotnik's brother.
Ma! The meatloaf!
Burger's functioning replacement for Kevin's heart. Mutant Astronaut. Congrats on the project, animation project. I haven't seen you do, dude. That's awesome. Some of Chad's bird friends. Nicholas Maloney. Need More Kimchi. Lucretia McEvil. Cameron Hansen. Logan Derby. Generally Depressing. Scott Wabel. Philip Reynolds. Nate Bit G, Ryan R. Davis, Resident Lorcana Guy, Gluten-Free Rocky Mountain Oysters, Artist formerly known as Stinklich, Chooch Rules, he does, Ninja Breadmen, Megan McCormick Mason, Aaron Lord, Sprinkle Buns, Dr. Chocula, Mike Hart, SSJ Trogdor, Max Boltzmann, Cassandra Harris, Farah, Mike Spaghetti Jones, Quest Goblin Grader, Kyle O'Neill, Kiwi of Lerv, Logan Kilgus, Mr. Bumpy versus the Closet Monster versus Destructo. I gotta watch some more Bump of the Night. I gotta dig that up. Oh, I miss that show every time I read your name. Chevy LaGrange, Max is a box that shoots death. I think that's called a TV. That's a heavy satire I got there. I'm sorry, Max. I don't know why I did that. Blarbin! Odin's Eyehole. Problem Child 2 on DVD. Turaku! You did not mention it doesn't go doink in the anime. I don't know, Turaku. What are you saying now? Are you trying to confuse me? Let's talk. Dacious! Wade Norcross. Jafar says, melt the quicksand. If you melt it, I think it's just going to turn into glass, right? Ben Flolios Sayer, The Strays. Jolly Old Jules. Bob Cabbage. Smell of Ease. The Shrekonomicon. Soap. Spencer Lee Johnson. I had a little bit of a lisp while I said that, Spencer. I hope that's okay. Solve Siglium Libera Nos. Okay, I took Latin in high school and college. I think that means figure out the sign. You'll read books at night. It's not right at all. Al and MC. Caleb doesn't have much to say this month. That's okay. Silence is a virtue. You know that guy that was yelling at the trumpet dude that one time in the famous meme? He's like, an artist respects the silence. Sometimes, Caleb, that's all you need. Tall glass of dumb bitch juice is ready for bed. I'm always ready for bed. R.L. Stein's leathery apocalyptic pepperoni nipples. Ugh. Treehouse of Jorge 6, The Curse of Treehouse Myers. Nintendo 60 Yorts. Or Jorts. I don't know why I thought the J would be more of a Yort. Complex. Wyvern. Angus Keith. Better a Yeti with a flaw than a Bigfoot without. Wolf CIA. Big old dumb burb, engaged to ladybird fiance. Congrats again, that's pretty rad. Felix. Eric Wink. Every time I say it, Eric, I wink. You just can't hear it. Nathan Galindo. J. Fen Crane. Ari. Andrew. Ventus 13. Ben L. cursed as a Halloween gingerbread, help! Well, Ben, you better watch out because next up is Snackwell's Cookie Monster. He's gonna eat ya. Or maybe you guys can be like allies. Avery. Snack Reiner, ally of the Cookie Monster. Zack Snyder, Fog Bread, Nick, and welcome to the Book of Names, NRG. Thank you also very, very much for supporting the show as we keep this going. We as in the Royal. I really, really appreciate all your guys' love and listens and sharing the show with people, especially y'all on the Patreon. Thank you all so much. See you next time. Bye-bye. You've reached the end of this episode of Goosebuds. Hosted and produced by Chad Quant. Hey, that's me. Associate produced by Heidi Butler. Edited by Ben Ravid. Art by Brock Gallagher. Theme music and interstitials by Seth Ernest. You can contact us at goosebuds@gmail.com. And please support the show and get access to bonus episodes and more at patreon.com/goosebuds.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting.
It's the Sleep Number Everything Smart Bed Sale. Every smart bed and base are on sale during our Memorial Day event. Up to 50% off, plus free home delivery. Limited time. Exclusively to Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.